They will regulate a militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Thank you for tuning in to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Coming up on the program in just a matter of moments, we're going to talk with Benjamin Dixon, who is a podcaster, a Bernie Sanders supporter, and someone who has brought a lot of attention to comments made by Michael Bloomberg back in 2015 in Aspen, Colorado, at an appearance at the Aspen Institute, in which he talked about stop and frisk and how the right way to go about reducing crime is to basically disarm young black men between the ages of 16 and 25, I think he said. And in order to do that, the best thing to do is to throw them up against the wall and to frisk them. Now, gun owners have been, I think, aware of these comments since shortly after they were made. I know that I started reporting on it back in 2016, but this never entered the broader conversation until Bloomberg decided that he was going to run for president. Benjamin Dixon started going through some of Bloomberg's old speeches, and he discovered this audio. He shared it on his podcast. Since then, a lot of folks are talking about it. Michael Bloomberg has had to come out and say, "Well, listen, that was years ago. I've completely changed since those long ago days of 2015." But as Benjamin Dixon explains, Bloomberg's support for stop and frisk actually continued long after those comments in Aspen, Colorado. Take a look and a listen. Benjamin, thank you so much, sir, for coming to the program. It's good talking with you today.
Pleasure's all mine. Thanks for having me.
You bet. And, you know, listen, I know that your politics and my politics are probably very, very different. But I think there's one thing that frankly, folks all across the political spectrum can agree on. And that is that, you know, Michael Bloomberg's policies as mayor of New York and the policies that he's advocating as a presidential candidate, frankly, should bother, you know, folks on the left and the right.
Yeah, you know, I did a radio interview this morning with a team out of Worcester, Massachusetts, and we landed there. That's honestly the thing that troubles me the most, particularly because of how he's circumventing. Bloomberg is circumventing the national conversation by virtue of his money. He doesn't have to engage on his philosophies of governance. He doesn't have to engage on his record because he's just on the outside. But when you look at that clip, right, whatever you feel about the racist component of it, the second component actually disturbs me the most, which is his solution, right? Which is defending the cops and to violate their Fourth Amendment and to really just use an authoritarian type style governing philosophy. And that, I think that is something we all can agree on is problematic.
Absolutely. And you know, I'm so glad that you ran across this audio of his speech back in Aspen in 2015. You know, I cover the Second Amendment news and information on a daily basis, been doing so since 2004. And so mm-hmm. I became aware of this. I think when the Aspen Times ended up writing about it in February of 2016, because they had asked for this audio and the Aspen Institute said, well, Bloomberg's not letting us release it, which was really mm-hmm. unusual. And so, you know, locally, this became a story in Colorado for a few weeks. I think within the Second Amendment community became a story for, you know, maybe a month or so. But your podcast and you putting this audio out there has really brought his comments to a national audience. And I think a lot of right. Americans are hearing this for the very first time, where he talks about, again, you know, the way to solve crimes, he says, is to go into these high crime communities to throw basically everybody, every young minority man up against the wall, he said, and right. frisk them. And we know right. based on the statistics in New York City that the vast majority of these stop and frisks did not lead to arrest. They did not lead exactly. to the discovery of any sort of contraband items. Bloomberg's mentality basically was throw everybody up against the wall, pat them down, and in doing so, we might be able to catch a few people who are illegally possessing guns.
Right. And this is his deeply held belief. That's the difference between reading the article from the Aspen Times and hearing the audio. The audio, you can hear that this is his measured thinking and rationale. This is his reasoning. This is something that he has crafted in his mind over a series of years, probably decades, as a means of justifying his worldview. That's something that must be interrogated by the American people. Like, you know, wherever we disagree, we all can agree said if someone wants to be the president of the United States, we should have the right to interrogate their deeply held beliefs. And that's what we saw, or rather we heard in this audio.
What do you think, Benjamin, about the policies behind the tactics? You know, one of the things that I pointed out recently was that, you know, when Bloomberg was mayor, he changed New York City law. Eventually, New York State law was changed. Making unlicensed possession of a firearm a felony offense, a mandatory, Bloomberg put in a mandatory minimum sentence of 3.5 years in prison for anybody caught possessing a firearm without a license, which frankly is not a crime in many states. It's a felony level offense there in New York City. And this has continued even after Bloomberg has left office. Emily Bazelon from Slate did a great story last year. She actually went to the Brooklyn Gun Court. She sat there every day for months just to see who these defendants were. And what she found is that, I think she said 70% of the defendants that she witnessed were young black men without any serious criminal history. Their only charge was, again, possessing a firearm without a license. And they're being sentenced to 3.5 years in prison. She said that New York City's replacing the war on drugs with a war on guns. And I'm curious to get your take on that.
You know, I don't know. I do believe that this is where our politics will differ. I do believe that we have to get a grip on gun violence, period.
Well, you and I don't disagree on that.
Right. Okay, well, great. So I do not agree with draconian measures that violate people's constitutional rights. And this is clearly the overall tactic of Bloomberg was that. Now, I can't speak specifically to his policies there in New York. I haven't taken the time to digest them enough to say whether I fully agree or disagree with it. But I do just have, just from everything that we've seen from Bloomberg, he has authoritarian leanings. And that's not how we solve the problem. There's got to be ways to solve the problem that does not require the government to smash people and smash their rights and throw them up against the wall. That's not how we need to get things done.
Absolutely. So what has been the reaction? I know you have a piece in The Guardian today where you talk about someone from CNN actually taking you to task for reporting on this, right? Christina Alessi. Yeah. Said, well, you know, listen, Benjamin's a Bloomberg supporter. He's a Bernie supporter. We don't know how he got this info. What is it? I mean, first of all, what does it matter that you're a Bernie Sanders supporter and that you've uncovered this audio? It doesn't change what Michael Bloomberg said.
Right. That was, you know, hey, mainstream media, right? This is ridiculous. I rarely use that phrase, right? Because it's been utilized so much by the right, but this is another place where we're going to agree. That was utterly ridiculous. The question is not where I got the audio. If she did some basic research, she could have found the audio and broken it, but she wouldn't because, as she did not disclose, she was a former employee of Bloomberg News, right? So the game and the fix is in a way that is so transparent in 2020 that it, you know, it would help if the media didn't do things like that. It makes everyone's job more difficult, for one. But then it makes smearing them even easier. I mean, it's so much easier for Donald Trump to get out there and say fake news when you have stuff like that happen.
Right. Well, yeah, absolutely. And what about Bloomberg's comments? You know, he's come out and said, I regret that I enforced stop and frisk. I inherited stop and frisk. He said he reduced stop and frisk as mayor. And you know, listen, don't listen to what I said 5 years ago. Listen to what I'm inundating you with on your TV screens, on your computer screens. Every time you go online, you're going to see a Bloomberg ad. Listen to what I'm saying now. Don't listen to what I said 5 years ago.
Yeah. So that's the, he's lying. He did not reduce stop and frisk as a matter of his choice. It was a court order, right? It was ruled unconstitutional, and he appealed that decision, so he was upset about that. So now for him to use that as a way of couching his apology is the height of disingenuousness. Like, it's absurd, but he's getting away with it because he's being insulated by media, he's been insulated by his wealth, and so overall, like, his response is not, it doesn't measure up. It simply does not measure up to the depth of his philosophy, right? If you listen to that clip, you can see the depth of his philosophy. He's taken time to think about this, to rationalize it. And so if his philosophy is the ocean, right, the Atlantic Ocean, his apology is a cup of water. And he has a lot of ground to make up. If you really want to be genuine about your apology, you have to go point by point and explain to us how you came to that type of thinking that's so problematic, and how did you leave that type of thinking? But instead, he just gave us a milquetoast apology so that he could run for president.
Well, yeah, I think the first time that he publicly said, oh, I've changed my mind on stop and frisk, was shortly before he declared his presidential candidacy. And I think it was at a black church in New York City. Yeah. Is that where he made his announcement?
It was a black church. I think it's like Christian Cultural Community. It's a really famous church, and I have a lot of respect for the pastor, A.R. Bernard, but really disappointed that he was afforded that platform to promote his own agenda without being held accountable for what he did.
Mm-hmm.
But still, love A.R. Bernard, been listening to his work, for years. But that's what he did. And he, in 2019, prior to that, he actually was justifying stop and frisk. So there's got to be he's got to be held accountable.
Yeah, well, what's fascinating is, I mean, since your story and since your podcast, brought these comments to the public's attention, other journalists have gone out and they found other interviews that Bloomberg has done in recent years. There was one that I saw yesterday where he actually talked about, well, you know, if you look at the stats, we're actually stopping and frisking more white people than we should be. We really shouldn't be stopping and frisking as many white people. We should be, stopping and frisking more young black men. And again, I don't know how Bloomberg dances around this issue. I don't know. Is it just a matter of throwing money at this problem and hoping that it goes away? Is that what he's hoping to do?
Here's the brilliant thing about this. And it's the fact that he could spend $350 million, or he's already spent $350 million, going towards $1 billion. And isn't it just apropos that a no-name podcast out of Atlanta that I record out of my home office may have set him back? And not only, it's not just the podcast, it's the network. It's the network of independent media.
Mm-hmm.
All of my friends in independent media, like, it wouldn't have got out if I didn't have the relationships for people to help push it. And so in terms of, does he think he could throw enough money at it to get away? Prior to social media, he could have.
You know, that's a really, really good point, especially when you talk about the networks that have been built, because I've seen over the past couple of years, Bloomberg's gun control efforts. He's done a lot to try to put anti-gun referendums on ballots in states across the country. And again, thrown a ton of money. He's far outspent the opposition. But in states like Maine, for example, a referendum that would have put quote-unquote universal background checks on the books, that actually got defeated. In a referendum process, even though I think he outspent opponents something like 12 or 14 to 1. And it was because of that grassroots network of people who actually live in the state of Maine, right? Who were talking to their friends, who were talking to their neighbors, who were able to kind of combat that out-of-state billionaire mentality. I do think that can be replicated in some form or fashion during the campaign of Bloomberg, the presidential campaign of Bloomberg. What is this network? Is it simply comprised of people on the left, or is this an opportunity, Benjamin, for people like you and I across the political aisle to come together and say, all right, listen, doesn't matter if you're a democratic socialist or you're a conservative, Bloomberg is he'll get it done, but you won't like the results.
Well, okay, yeah, I can agree with that very last part. And I could say that I support universal background checks, and I could say that we could have some really fascinating arguments, but I appreciate that we could have that agreement, that Bloomberg is not, he is not the solution, because it's precisely what you said. The way he will get it done is not something that's going to be beneficial, to America, Americans, nor the Constitution. So on that much, we do agree.
All right. Well, I tell you what, let's leave it there, but come back sometime and let's have that debate, because you and I think are in agreement. Yes, we'll have an argument, because I think you and I are in agreement about the need to make these communities safer. I think the argument or the disagreement is going to come on how we do that. But I would love to have you back. Benjamin, thank you so much for your time today, sir.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You bet. Benjamin Dixon joining us here on Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. So I do appreciate Benjamin coming on the program, and I do hope that he'll come back as well. I'm ready for that. I don't want it to be an argument, but I'm ready for that debate or for that discussion, because one of the things that I do hope people on the left whether they're Bernie Sanders supporters, Elizabeth Warren supporters, Pete Buttigieg supporters, even Michael Bloomberg supporters. One of the things that I hope that they understand is that the problem with Michael Bloomberg's policies weren't just that he was an ardent supporter of stop and frisk. It's what happened after individuals were stopped and frisked, and perhaps they were found with a firearm that they did not have a license for. Michael Bloomberg ensured as mayor that the penalty for carrying a firearm without a license was going to be a 3.5-year mandatory minimum prison sentence. And if you, as I talked with Benjamin before during that interview, you look and you see who's actually been caught up in Bloomberg's gun control laws. The vast majority of individuals are individuals without a serious criminal history who are, you know, getting sentenced to years in prison for something that is not even a crime in many states around the country. And this is how these gun laws get enforced. You know, a lot of I think there's a huge disconnect among a lot of Americans who say, well, yeah, we should have these gun laws. And yeah, we should have universal background checks. We should have these gun bans. We should have these magazine bans. You know, we absolutely want to see these laws on the books. But then you talk about enforcement of these laws. And all of us says, well, I don't like the way that these laws are being enforced. Well, listen, this is part and parcel of the gun control agenda. It's not about just putting the laws on the books. It's about arresting people, hauling them into court, and sentencing them for exercising their right to keep and bear arms. I believe, and there are a lot of law enforcement officials, there are a lot of folks who are professionals within the criminal justice movement who have studied this issue for decades, who say that these broad gun control policies that are largely aimed at legal gun owners are not the way to reduce violent crime. They're not the way to make communities safer. That a much more effective way of doing that is to actually focus on the small number of individuals who are driving violent crime in their communities. And when you do that, when you focus on those individuals, when you put in place programs like Project Ceasefire that tell these bad actors, listen, you're going to stop shooting one way or the other. We're going to help you if you let us, but we're going to make you if you don't. When those programs are put in place and are effectively run, not only does the violent crime rate drop, the homicide rate plunges. Kids can actually start playing in their front yards again. Moms and dads don't have to worry about their children going to the park. And it doesn't involve a single new gun control law on the books. All it is about is effectively targeting those individuals who are creating such mayhem and misery in the places where they live. You don't have to target the good people in bad neighborhoods. You have to target the people who are making these neighborhoods bad neighborhoods. And even in the most crime-ridden neighborhood, we're not talking about a majority of residents. We're talking about a relative handful of individuals who are known to the community, who are known to law enforcement. And again, these programs are not theoretical ideas. They've been put in place around the country over the past two decades, and they work. But Bloomberg's not interested in that. Bloomberg's whole idea is based on passing these broad laws that will impact the legal gun owners, the law-abiding gun owners, and possibly ensnare a few bad actors, right? Unfortunately, you know, again, go back to New York City. Emily Bazelon, I mentioned her piece at Slate. When she talks about these young men without serious criminal histories who are, you know, now facing 3.5 years in prison, I would love to hear Michael Bloomberg actually try to defend that. Does he really believe that that is the appropriate place for individuals who may have made a mistake or two, maybe even starting down a bad path? Is the best thing to do to lock them up for 3.5 years in a prison, give them that sort of finishing school in criminality? Or is the better way to try to help them turn their lives around? And if they fail to do so, then throw the book at them. Absolutely. But I got to tell you, you know, these gun control policies that are advanced by Bloomberg, this goes far beyond stop and frisk, and the damage done to individuals who are not violent criminals has been immense, and it would only be exponentially worse if Michael Bloomberg were to become president. All right, let's get to today's armed citizen story, our recidivist report, our good deed of the day. We'll start with our recidivist report. Louisville, Kentucky, where police have charged a 24-year-old with the murder of a 21-year-old woman back in December. And, you know, again, just as we were talking about, this individual known to police, Jalen Bell, has now been charged with murder, possessing a handgun as a convicted felon, and tampering with evidence after police say he shot Kayla Hunter Purcell on December the 6th, 2019. The 21-year-old died later that night at the University of Louisville Hospital. Courier-Journal, a newspaper in Louisville, Kentucky, says police learned through an investigation of witnesses that Hunter Purcell and two other females were on this Caldwell Street there in Louisville due to an altercation that began on Instagram. Jalen Bell allegedly showed up at the scene, started arguing with Hunter Purcell. She then exited a vehicle that she was in. Bell tried to grab a handgun away from her. Hunter Purcell yelled repeatedly at Bell to stop grabbing at the gun because it was loaded with one round in the chamber. Bell eventually pulled the gun away, causing it to discharge, the bullet hitting Hunter Purcell. The gun was then removed from the scene, as yet to be discovered, according to Louisville police. Bell, a convicted felon on federal probation at the time of the shooting, fled the scene in a vehicle. He has previously been convicted for a 2014 shooting that wounded a 16-year-old boy, according to court records. But he was already back out on the streets. Now stands accused of murder when he should have been behind bars. Our armed citizen story of the day from ABC 13 in Houston, where a couple who owns an ice cream shop ended up fighting back and defending themselves against a pair of armed robbers. KTRK in Houston reports that Jorge Padillo and his wife were at work at La Michoacana Authentica in Northwest Harris County in Texas. It was February the 1st. Guy comes in. You can see that in the surveillance video. As Jorge Padilla reached for, he opened up the cash register. The guy reaches over, starts trying to grab the cash. Jorge Padilla then struggled with the man while his wife, Nadia Padilla, stood up from her seat. KTRK says, made sure that her children were safe in the back of the store, and then she retrieved her handgun. She fired a shot at the robber. Surveillance video shows her husband chasing the man out of the store. Nadia Padilla told KTRK, quote, I hope they think twice about this next time. According to the Harris County Sheriff's Office, the suspect is believed to be responsible for at least seven robberies in the area since early January. Investigators released photos of the suspect who has been seen leaving stores in a light-colored Toyota Corolla or a small U-Haul box truck. Thankfully, the Padillas are okay. And I imagine that this would-be robber is probably going to think twice before targeting their business again. Finally, our good deed of the day from Charlotte, North Carolina, where a mom has been given a new car and the financial assistance needed to help move into an apartment by the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department. Shakira is a single mom, works two jobs here in the Charlotte area, WBTV in Charlotte. Said until recently, she and her two children were homeless. Her older sister passed away, which she says started a spiral into hard times. She works in a healthcare field, but she says, quote, I got behind on bills. The only thing I did was take care of my children. I never really had time to grieve, and I was just struggling to get through the day. Her kids in second and fourth grade went to school every day, despite the fact that they did not have a home. One day they ended up telling the guidance counselor that they were homeless. That counselor said, quote, as part of the school system, there's a program called the McKinney-Vento program that identifies anyone who's homeless. And we wanted to make sure that those families get help. It's a federal program. So if they're moving around to different homes or different people's houses, we have to make sure that they have a consistent home, she said. So she ended up contacting a couple of police officers that she knew. Officer Rick Zorb with the Charlottenburg-Mecklenburg Police Department, he started what's called the Emergency Needs Fund. This is money that he has raised personally through contacting private businesses. It's available for officers to help people in the community that they come across. I think this is a great idea. Officer Zorb said the important part is that this fund is not a part of the Charlottenburg-Mecklenburg Police Department's budget. It's not taxpayer dollars. There's not a lot of red tape. If we see people who need help, we try to help them. In Shakira's case, he says, she was a mom that was working hard on two jobs and she fell on hard times. She wasn't looking for a handout. She was looking for a hand up. Shakira says that Officer Zorb put down a down payment, move-in fees for a clean apartment, helped her furnish it, got beds for the kids, ended up bringing Christmas presents for those two kids back in December. And while actually WBTV was talking with Shakira, there was a knock on the door. It was Officer Zorb. And he let her know. He said, I contacted Keffer Kia about your situation. And the owner of the dealership, Jim Keffer, wants to give you a car. He said, no more trying to rent transportation to get the kids to school or to your job. He says, it's not a new car, but it's something that will get you from point A to point B. It's donated. It's free. You're going to have a title to it. She said that this fund and this help has been a lifesaver. She said, my kids have their own rooms. She said, it makes me happy. Their faces, they're smiling, they're happy when they come home from school. So, you know, again, in the right place at the right time and willing and able to do the right thing in terms of reaching out to these local businesses, cutting through that red tape and setting up this fund that officers can use to help those that they see who are struggling and need that help. Officer Rick Zorb with the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department, or the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department, we thank you for your very good deed. That is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program today. Coming up tomorrow, we're going to talk with an attorney who is challenging the ATF's designation that bump stocks are now banned after years of saying otherwise. That case is making its way through the court system. We'll give you all the details. Don't forget, you can subscribe to Bearing Arms, Cam and Company a couple of different ways. Town Hall Media on YouTube. You can also subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, townhall.com's podcast page. And you can become a contributing member, a VIP member of BearingArms.com. At BearingArms.com, you get exclusive analysis, commentary of all of the day's Second Amendment news and events. We certainly do appreciate your support. Thanks for watching, for listening, for spreading the word. We'll see you back here tomorrow with another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company.